You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Seferovic on the move, so too Shaqiri! Sherdan Shaqiri at the double for Switzerland.
And it's tucked in by Pessina. Well, if that was a rehearsed routine, it worked brilliantly, didn't it?
So we had two simultaneous matches for the first time at Euro 2020, and we're loving it, Chris.
We are. Group A is done and dusted. Wales lose, but join Italy in the last 16, and Switzerland have to wait now to find out their fate.
And not two, not three, but four matches on Monday. We preview them all with the help of Kasper Schmeichel, Roberto Martinez, Andriy Shevchenko and Frank de Boer.
We take you to Amsterdam, Bucharest, Copenhagen and St. Petersburg at Euro 2020.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly, and as ever, I'm with Chris Parrott. Chris, how are we doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Rob.
We saw two unbelievable goals from Sherdan Shaqiri. Seems to come to life in a Swiss shirt.
He does, but that might not have been the best goal of the game in that wonderful match in Baku where Switzerland beat Turkey, because Irfan Can Kvecci unleashed an absolute rocket, Rob, on his left foot from the edge of the box. One of those that dips and swerves and had too much for the goalkeeper. It was a brilliant goal. But yeah, Sherdan Shaqiri was excellent. Switzerland were excellent. But unfortunately for them, they finished behind Wales in third on goal difference. So it's Wales who became the fourth team into the last 16. I can see Gareth Bale doing an interview despite losing big smile on his face, because they've joined Italy, Belgium and the Netherlands in the last 16. Switzerland, 4 points though, Rob. They would be very, very unlucky not to go through as one of the four best third ranked teams.
Yeah, we'll get onto the details of that shortly. And making her debut on this show is the former England, Arsenal, Chelsea and Juve forward Leanne Sanderson. Hello, Leanne.
Hello, good evening.
What have you made of Euro 2020 so far? We are on day 10 now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obviously, everyone was eagerly anticipating this tournament. You know, football's back. A lot of fans are back in the stadiums. I think it's been fantastic. I think as the tournament's gone on and the players are playing even better than they did before, I think it's been a difference. Obviously, England-Scotland game was a bit anticlimactic, I think, you know, but I think the tournament's been brilliant and it's just great to see the fans back in the stadiums.
And we will get on to some of the other teams in the tournament later in the show as well. You played in the final of Women's Euro back in 2009, England beaten by Germany. What are your memories of that run to the final in Finland?
Yeah, it was a weird one because we actually made the final in 2009 by coming third place in the group.
Because like Portugal almost in 2016 in the men's game.
Yeah, it wasn't like we did that on purpose. I just don't think we played as well as we could have done. And this is a long time ago now. And then obviously we came third in the group. And then we ended up playing Finland in the next round, Sweden, and we played Germany in the final. And I was actually on the bench for that game. And it's, you know, I still have my medal. You know, it's a silver medal. It's one of those things where you don't really know quite what to do with them. You want to put them in your cabinet, but then you also don't want to because you don't like losing. And I came on in that game and we were like 7-2. It was 7-2 in the end. So it's one of those games where I don't really want to remember it. But I was still, you know, I was only 17, 18 years old. And to play in a European Championship at that age for your country was fantastic. But the Germans that day were just too good.
An extraordinary achievement, Leanne. Today, by the way, we're talking about good free kick takers, best free kick takers at Euro 2020. If you want to get in touch with us, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter is the way to do it using hashtag Euroshow. Chris, who do you think is the best free kick taker at this tournament?
At this tournament, I would put Gareth Bale right up there, actually. I think we saw one from Granit Xhaka that hit the post today. He'd probably be in the mix. Can I also go throughout Euro history as well?
Sure.
I mean, there have been some remarkable. Giorgi Hagi, you know, the great Romanian player, could whack in a free kick. And actually, Michel Platini too, who was perhaps the first player to really master the free kick, I think. If you look back at some footage of him, he perfected a very short run-up and barely any backlift, but he had an unbelievable success rate of taking free kicks. So they'd be my old Euro stars, if you like, from a free kick point of view.
Sort of feels like you don't actually see that many direct free kick goals these days. I don't know if that's right, but it just feels that way. Thanks for sending in your messages. Camille has gone for Kevin De Bruyne, obviously, and Randy, using the hashtag Euroshow, has gone for David Alaba of Austria and now Real Madrid, of course. Leanne, have you played with any very good free kick takers? I did actually catch one of yours in the United States where the goalkeeper wasn't ready, the defence weren't ready, and you flicked it in for a goal.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
And I actually saw Thierry Henry do it originally, and I was at the game and I thought, I'm going to try that. And obviously it's not illegal to do it. I think it caught the other team completely by surprise, because I kind of put my hand over my mouth as I was running up to the ball and I said, can I take it now? And the goalkeeper wasn't ready, and you know, there was 22,000 fans there, first game of the season. It was fantastic. So I love taking free kicks, but that's the type of free kick that you can only do once, because then after that everybody stood in front of me every time I got a free kick. But I think at this tournament, you know, I'd have to agree with Chris, Gareth Bale, but I also think Ronaldo. I don't think he scores as many free kicks, it seems. When he moved to Juventus and when he plays for Portugal, he doesn't seem to score as many as he did for Manchester United. You know, I remember the Portsmouth one, course, you know, fantastic goals. And Bale actually is a very good free kick taker. And I feel like when they were both at Madrid, Bale almost got bullied off of the free kicks because it was Cristiano Ronaldo. But Bale does take a very good free kick. I think Trippier as well takes a good free kick. But obviously, he hasn't really played. He played in one game. But yeah.
Keep your suggestions coming in using the hashtag Euroshow. Well, let's start our review with Group A coming to a close. Italy took on Wales in Rome, whilst Switzerland played Turkey in Baku. Lots to play for. Here's how they played out.
So a fine finale in prospect to this Group A. Simultaneous kickoff time. Seferovic! The Swiss number nine has been quiet in the tournament so far, but he's sprung into life tonight in Baku. Sheridan Shaqiri curls in, an absolute beauty. And it's tucked in by Pessina. She has to glance. Well, if that was a rehearsed routine, it worked brilliantly, didn't it? Oh, my word. It's a red card for Ampadu. Oh, what a goal! A fantastic strike. We are seeing some superb goals here this evening. Seferovic on the move, so to Shaqiri! Sheridan Shaqiri at the double for Switzerland!
We heard it in chronological order there, the goals as they went in Group A. And Chris, just before we get to the standings, there was a moment there, especially around the Ethan Ampadu red card, where the group did feel a little bit wider open.
Yeah, it only required a two-goal swing for Wales to finish third and Switzerland to finish second. And at that stage, Rob, Shaqiri made a very, very good save from Haris Seferovic. Now, had that gone in, then, of course, it would have just needed one goal and Italy were playing against 10-man Wales after Ampadu's red card. And you thought, this could really, really be on. But in the end, Wales got over the line. And Switzerland, you sense as well, thought that was an opportunity. So they went forward and then Turkey scored, which just for a fleeting moment, Turkey thought, we might not be out of this if we score two more goals. So
we can nick third.
Yeah, in particular, in that match in Baku, that was pretty much non-stop attacking for 90 minutes. It was a great watch. And in the end, Switzerland winning. But as we said right at the top, they have to wait. They would, though, Rob, I'll reiterate it, to not go through with their goal difference and with 4 points would take something quite extraordinary happening over the next few days.
OK, so let's just go through the standings very quickly and the way it finished. Italy, of course, with three wins from three, finishing on 9 points. A brilliant showing for them. Italy on 4 points, Switzerland on 4 points, Wales and Switzerland level on head-to-head record, but goal difference, therefore, the difference between them. And that's why Wales in second. Turkey bottom. They didn't manage to pick up a point in the section. Well, let's start with Italy versus Wales then. So 1-0 it finished in Rome, where Italy made 8 changes. Only Donnarumma, Bonucci and Jorginho kept their spots. Wales made 3 changes, interestingly, Chris, based on yellow cards.
Yeah, so Kiefer Moore, Ben Davis and Chris Meppham were all a yellow card away from potential suspension in the last 16. So none of them started. I think that's quite clever from Rob Page's point of view. I think he looked at that and thought, why take the risk that, you know, anything can happen in a match? And if suddenly they're then suspended for one of the biggest games in Welsh footballing history, it will be. So I can absolutely see why he did it. I thought Italy were very impressive, Robin. And there are some extraordinary stats going around now. I mean, they are history makers. That is a 30th consecutive match without defeat for Italy, which equals their record set by Vittorio Pozzi's side in the 1930s. So that's the type of level that Roberto Mancini, who's just being interviewed, by the way, he is as cool as you like. He's got his he's got his jacket just nonchalantly over his shoulder doing the interview. He looks as happy as can be, and why not? They're in remarkable form, right? And Leanne, they now have gone over 1,000 minutes without conceding a goal. Can I just, from a former player's point of view, did you ever play or play against a team that you just thought, we are never going to concede, we're playing as well as we are?
Potentially, but I think it's one of those things where it breeds confidence. I think the changes they made today, they still were able to win the game. And I think they look like a team that's in form. And I think they've almost kind of, you know, not qualifying for the last tournament. A lot of people almost, you know, wrote them off. But I think they look unbelievable, don't they? You know, you read out the stats, 10 games, no conceding a goal, not conceding a goal. It's amazing, really. And, you know, when you've got the likes of Chiellini and Bonucci in your team, you know, I played at Juventus and I've seen them play nearly every home game. of the season, because I used to go to watch every Juventus game, and the leadership that they have, you know, they literally every time they do a tackle, it's like they've scored a goal. You know, they're in front of the goal, like screaming, the way their passion for the national anthem and stuff like that. And having played in Italy myself, like, I know how hard they train. And I was saying this before, like, the misconception is that Italians are very laid back, which culturally, yes, but when it comes to football, there's no rest days, there's no down days, and these guys are really, really fit. And, you know, these Italians look fantastic, don't they? And, you know, Mancini looks so, like, cool and calm, and the players do as well in their suits. You know, those kind of things make a difference, I think. A lot of teams are going to be fearing them.
Very good culture within that squad right now. By the way, Federico Chiesa came into the starting 11 and was named start of the match. We can hear from the Italian forward now.
It was a great team performance. We're playing really well. We are a great team and we're having a lot of fun playing. So I think all the players who have played today play greatly. We have a great commitment. We play all together, and it is really great to be here and to play these heroes with this Italian team, thanks to the coach.
Well, Chiesa, one of those who came into the team, Chris, as did the goal scorer who enjoyed the moment.
Yeah, he certainly did. It was another intricate free kick or set piece in Italy. They've done this on a number of occasions so far in this summer's Euro 2020. Lovely ball in from Marco Verratti, who surprisingly was making his Euro debut. And Matteo Pessina then flicked it on the near post, really, and beat the goalkeeper to his right-hand side. But what I liked about it, and our reporter Vieri Capretti tweeted a picture, absolutely got the shot you wanted, was the group celebration from some of those bigger names who were left out being rested today. Everyone was fully involved with the goal celebration. And I think you can see not just the spirit that Roberto Mancini's squad have now, but they all look like they're absolutely loving this tournament. And I just wonder, from a former player's point of view, Leanne, how important is that as they now go into the knockout stages?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the thing about Italians, they're very passionate. When the Italians are doing well, it is the greatest thing ever. Like Juventus, when I scored a goal, I feel like I almost became Italian when I was there, because I'd run off, celebrate, you know, and it's so great. Like, they love their football so much.
You feed off that passion.
Yeah. Definitely. Like, I scored after my injury, I actually scored on my first game back for Juventus after being out for a year and a half. And it was just a fantastic feeling. I have the picture, you know, it's framed with all my teammates. And honestly, they have that winning mentality. And I really appreciate that I had those experiences there, because I learned a lot about Italian football that I never would have thought. You know, people talk about Serie A, you know, it's slow and all stuff like that. And, you know, the players are really laid back. They're not. So, you know, these Italians, definitely, you know, they know how to win, and they will do it with passion, heart, the same as they sing their national anthem.
And a nice little squad moment in the end as Donnarumma came off for Salvatore Sirigu in the last minute to replace him in goal to get him an appearance at this Euro. They do seem like a united group, but so do Wales. Let's hear from their talisman and captain, Gareth Bale.
Obviously, we knew it was going to be a very difficult game from the start. Yeah, it was a lot of defending, a lot of running, some very tired bodies out there. So, proud of the boys, obviously. We wanted to try and get a result, but I guess it made no difference. We finished second anyway, so we have to just recover again now. We've got, I think, a little bit of a break now, maybe 5 days. So, we'll patch everyone up and, get going again.
Really, the brilliant win over Turkey did it for Wales. That put them in a fine position to get second, and they do get it. Gareth Bale, you saw him even when Ampadu was sent off, consoling him as he went off. When Kiefer Moore came on as a sub, arm around him, get stuck in kind of thing. He does seem like a genuine leader. Were you surprised, Leanne? I know that you really like David Brooks, who's in that world squad. Were you surprised, and Bale mentioned it there, how tired they are? Were you surprised there weren't a few more changes to the team in Rome?
Yeah, potentially. I think it's an interesting one, because even in the first game, I thought Dan James was the best player and he got subbed off. So it was a weird one. But yeah, I think as the tournament goes on, I mean, this is a team that look like they're having confidence. They seem like they don't really have any egos in their team. You know, having players like Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, you know, they are leaders. They are playing at some of the best teams in the world. You know, Gareth Bale at Real Madrid, obviously at Tottenham to be determined. But, you know, Aaron Ramsey at Juventus, like, they are leaders. And when you have players like that in your team, anything is possible. You know, in the last game, it was almost like telepathy. That ball, you know, that they played through to each other. It's one of those things, you can't coach that. That's something that you just naturally have between you and another player. And I've had it in my career as well when I was at Arsenal. So it's a good feeling that they have, and I don't think they get carried away. You know, I think that's important for this Welsh team. Like, when you see them in the huddle at the end of the game, they did it in the games they've lost, they do it in the games they win. But David Brooks, I'm a big fan of his, and I think he would maybe feature a little bit more had he not have had the injuries that he's had this season.
Yeah, it was great to see Rob Page at the end, Rob, in the Olympico, going over to the Wales supporters and celebrating. I think we need to put into context just how big this achievement is for Wales. You think of the population of the country, 2016 was unforgettable when they made the semi-finals. But remember, Euro 2016 was Wales' first international tournament since 1958 at the FIFA World Cup. So to make back-to-back knockout stages at Euro is a phenomenal achievement for that country. And yes, they have some unbelievable players, in particular Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey. But I think as a collective group to have reached the last 16, they should be applauded once more. And they'll go to Amsterdam now and they'll really believe that maybe they can make the last eight, maybe they can make the last four again.
There could have been more goals in this game. Pessina stabbing wide, having scored moments before towards the back end of the first half. We saw Bernadeschi with a fine free kick hit the post, and Gareth Bale maybe with a quarter of an hour to go could have got an equaliser when he had a volley in plenty of space inside the penalty area. But Wales will just be delighted with this. It is a phenomenal achievement to reach the knockouts, as Chris mentioned there. Let's move on to Switzerland 3-1 at the Baku Olympic Stadium. Chris, your thoughts on this one?
Well, I mean, it was a proper end-to-end game, and you have to feel slightly sorry, I think, for Switzerland over the course of the group, because if you remember particularly the first half on opening night against Wales, they were the better team in Baku. Wales got a point. Even Rob Page said it feels like a victory. We know really that, you know, we had to dig in and we got a bit of luck, and had Switzerland won that game, they probably would have been comfortably into second. I thought this was a very, very good performance. Shaqiri's goals were excellent. Brill Embolo was back to that rampaging, strong centre-forward causing problems. And, you know, Vladimir Petkovic and his team don't absolutely know they're through, so they're going to have that kind of strange wait. But if they do go to the last 16, they're going to look back on the way they played against Turkey and think, if we can replicate that performance, then we're going to be very, very difficult to beat at this summer's Euro.
Well, Jerdan Shaqiri's been speaking about his two brilliant goals.
Yeah, especially the first one with my right foot. That was really, really good technique. And yeah, I'm very happy and pleased that I could help the team with my two goals, and that we react after defeat against Italy. And that was very good today. And yeah, I'm very, very pleased for the performance from the team. And of course, I'm very happy to help with my two goals. I think we played like a unit, and that was crucial today against this team. And we knew that if we play good, then we're going to create a lot of chances against this team. And we did. Very pleased with the win in the end. And yeah, I'm very happy.
Well, he scored one of the best goals in Euro history in 2016. Two brilliant goals in Baku. Leanne, are you surprised to see him looking so sharp, given how little game time he's had at Liverpool this season?
Potentially. I think I've always been a massive fan of Shaqiri's. I tweeted about him, you know, in the first game, because I think because he's gone to a team like Liverpool, you know, he hasn't really played as much. Yes, he's had injuries. But when he played for Stoke, you know, I remember him playing at Old Trafford, and Stoke actually beat Manchester United when I was at the game. And I remember thinking, this guy's an absolute really good player, and I think sometimes he goes a bit under the radar. So I'm glad that he got his two goals, and I've always said, you know, he's the type of player that I think he has that little bit extra. You know, I think he's got the strength, I think he's got the power, he's technically very, very good. Yeah. You know, and I think when you sometimes watch players live, you have a new appreciation for just how good they are.
And I think Vladimir Petkovic gave Jerdan Shaqiri not quite a free role, but he certainly took the handbrake off. And, you know, before this game, a lot of media in Switzerland were talking potentially about how open and attractive Switzerland are. And I don't think we necessarily saw that. We did a bit against Wales. We didn't get against Italy, but they were very much back to that in Baku, weren't they? And they scored three goals. Had they scored five or six, I don't think Turkey could have complained. And if Shaqiri is going to be given that license to roam and go where he wants, really, in the final third, then he is really going to be a player to watch in these knockout stages if Switzerland are confirmed as one of the best third-place teams.
Turkey were flying in that opening 5 minutes, by the way, to create two very good chances. Forced a very good save from Jan Sommer, who days ago became a father for the second time. But Haris Seferovic will be wondering how his goal on 6 minutes was the worst goal of the game, because it was an absolutely phenomenal strike. Leanne, Turkey, you know, there was a lot of hype around them going into this tournament. We'd seen their great defensive record in qualifying, but they just couldn't deliver at Euro.
Yeah, I think nobody expected this game to have as many goals as it did. But yeah, definitely Turkey. I mean, I think a lot of people expect them to do a lot better than they have been. And I think it's not only the fact that they're not really scoring goals, it's the performances that they're putting in, and I don't think have been at the level we expect them to be. So I'm sure they're going to be really disappointed, you know. And fair play to Switzerland, you know, come out, scored three goals. They've got great players, but they're definitely disappointed with Turkey.
Chris, it's what we heard about on the show, the previous edition of this show.
Yes.
That there did seem to be that mood in the Turkey camp that they knew, you know, even if they won the game, they were going out.
Yeah, we heard that last night from Gökhan Kyrgios, didn't we? When he said that when he looked in the players' eyes, he wasn't 100% convinced, because had Turkey won, they might have gone through as one of the best third place teams. But look, I think the highlight for them of a disappointing tournament will be that goal, and it was an absolute cracker. They were the youngest squad at Euro, and so this group of players will come back and will hope to qualify for the next FIFA World Cup and will hope to qualify for the next Euro. And they've started World Cup Qatar qualifying very, very well indeed. So they'll have to dust themselves off. And for a lot of these players, it was their first taste of international football. And whatever's happened to them, they will take an enormous amount from these three matches. And if they can channel that and use that and learn from that, then I think this group of Turkey players over the next 5-10 years together can still achieve something pretty good.
They struggled up against Steven Zubar, who got 3 assists in the game, equaling the record set by Turkey's Hamit Altıntop against the Czech Republic in 2008. So Switzerland finished third, and we wait to find out their fate. The day really belongs to the Italians and the Welsh. Let's hear from Lindsay Hooper, who's at the UEFA Football Village in London with supporters of both nations.
And with Sebastiano, who's watched Italy impress once again, you must be delighted with the way that your team are playing.
Yeah, they played very, very well, and I like them very much. And it appears that they are playing so easy. It's very well. It's a joy to watch them.
What is it, do you think, that's going to be the difference for you to be able to get to the late stages of the competition? Is it this solid defence, or is it the options you have in front?
This time, I think that the midfielders are very, very good. I think that the stunning thing is that the manager, Roberto Mancini, has given us a real new kind of play. Very, very good.
And with Josh, a Wales fan, and I suppose it's double-edged sword, really, because you lost to Italy, but you know that you're second in the group.
Yeah. It's just amazing that we got through. I can't say anymore. At the moment, it's ridiculous that we got through, and we'll enjoy the rest of the tournament.
It was a tough group, wasn't it, for the Welsh? Italy, Switzerland, Turkey, very regular teams in European competition, but they have progressed in second. You know, obviously, I think we can agree a run to the quarterfinals, Chris, would be a phenomenal achievement, wouldn't it, for the Welsh? Leanne, for Italy, is ironically now, having been relatively understated about their prospects pre-tournament, is the pressure on them now yet to concede? They've won all their games. Everyone is suddenly looking at the Azzurri.
No, I don't think the pressure is necessarily on them. I think, you know, they've been quietly going about their business, and I don't think people can actually believe the stats that they do have. You know, before the tournament, I don't think people really looked at them as a nation that they thought could win. Then after the first and second games, now people are saying, you know, they could go on to win the tournament. I still think there's going to be tough opposition in France, Germany, you know, those types of teams I still think are just that step, you know, ahead when it comes to quality. But I do think that one thing you're going to get with the Italians is the quality. You know, their players are all kind of, and like I said before, with Bonucci and Chiellini in your team, anything is possible, because those guys lead by example, you know, and they really get their teammates going. And those are the type of players that you need in your team. You know, I don't think at England we necessarily have a player like that. They're like a Chiellini or a Ramos. You know, I know Ramos is not the Euros, but that can just kind of like say, come on, guys. You know what I mean? So that leadership is really important, but it's not surprising to me. Like I said, having spent, you know, nearly 2 years in Italy, they're in the position they're in because not only do they look great, they're playing great.
And, you know, Rob, they'll be plotting their route to Wembley now, and they can sit back and watch the matches which are taking place on Monday, and they're going to face Ukraine or Austria at Wembley for a place in the quarterfinals. So that will be a really interesting round of 16 tie.
Certainly will. Okay, plenty more to come on the show. We're going to be hearing from some great names, including Kasper Schmeichel, on Denmark's final group match.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Okay, Chris, we've lost the early kickoff time now, haven't we? But we do gain an extra football match.
Yeah,
with the new schedule. So, what's Monday? What's the deal with Monday?
We've got four games, Rob. Four games as Group C and Group B come to a close, which means we've got two matches kicking off at 6 p.m. I should say, Central European Summertime. That is in Group C. Ukraine against Austria. It's basically a winner-takes-all match in Bucharest. And then in Amsterdam, North Macedonia against Netherlands, who are already through as group winners. And then, 3 hours later, kicking off at 2100 Central European Summertime, Group B. And this is a fantastic section. Finland against Belgium. Belgium are through. Finland aren't yet. And neither are Russia nor Denmark, who meet in Copenhagen. And we're going to get onto it in a moment, Rob. But this could get very, very, very complex as the night goes on. So those are the two late games. And by this stage tomorrow, that last 16, you know, is really going to start taking shape, isn't it?
I'm going to leave the maths to you on
please
that
don't.
As well. Okay, for this part of the show, we're going to try our best to take you to the scene of every match on Monday. So that's Copenhagen we're going to here, Bucharest, Amsterdam and St. Petersburg. And we'll start our preview with Group B and Russia versus Denmark. It's clearly been a tough Euro for Denmark after Christian Eriksen's medical emergency during that opening match against Finland. The Danish goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel's been speaking about this situation and how it's helped bring the group together.
Well, I think our coach said it before, you know, these are the kind of situations where we've been in before where we need to get a result. This team, you know, I think you hear it a lot when people talk about the team, that there's unity and there's good team spirit and all this. But I think when, you know, when the chips are down and things are really, really bad, that's when you really show your true colours. I think this team showed what the reason we play football to start off with as children, the reason we love this game. It's not always because of football, it's because of what football can do and the kind of togetherness it can harvest. I think we as a team, we showed what it means to be Danish, what makes being Danish special. I think that the days following has also shown exactly why we love this game so much, why we love our country so much, the way that everybody's come together, the way the country's come together, the support that we've seen, the game the other night, even though it wasn't a full stadium. I mean, you'd have never known standing on the pitch that there wasn't 100,000 people in there. I've never experienced anything like that personally. It's always been special to play for your country, but this last week has shown exactly why we sacrifice what we do, spending so much time away from our families, from our children, because this is special. And to see that football can unite a country the way that it has these last few days is, that's the reason I play, and I think that's the reason why many of us play.
Extraordinary stuff from Kasper Schmeichel. I mean, he doesn't wear the captain's armband, Leanne, but he is such a leader in that group, isn't he? It's great to hear him there.
Yeah, he's brilliant. You know, I think a lot of the time before, he's obviously compared to his dad quite often. And I think, you know, at this point in time, I think he's earned his right to be Kasper Schmeichel, not, you know, Peter Schmeichel's son. Obviously, Peter Schmeichel being one of the greatest ever goalkeepers, but he's a fantastic leader. And you're right, he doesn't wear the captain armband. But when you see him for Leicester, you know, when you see him for Denmark, he certainly just has this aura about him that you'd love to have a Kasper Schmeichel in your team. You know, I'd love to have him as my goalkeeper because I think, you know, he seems to have a very good, you know, personality, heart, and he's also a very good goalkeeper, you know. So yeah, I think it's great to hear his words and how much football can bring a nation together, you know. Obviously everything they went through, the whole world, you know, went through it with them, so it's so great to see, you know, that they're starting to recover from that, and I think everybody wants Denmark to do well.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And you know, look, Denmark, if they can play the way they did for the first half against Belgium, then you would think they have a very good chance of getting something from this game. Remember, Denmark no longer have matters in their own hands. So they really need to win. As for Russia, their win over Finland on match day two means a win over Denmark will see them reach the last 16. And UEFA's Russia reporter Artur Petrosyan is in Copenhagen now for us ahead of this match. Artur, hello.
No worries. Hi.
So Russia then, going into this match, it's their first game outside of Russia in Copenhagen. How are they feeling against what is an enormous decider, really, against Denmark?
Yeah, it's going to be decisive. The only good news for now is that Mario Fernandez is fully fit. He fell awkwardly against Finland and there was a worry that he had a spine injury, but luckily he's fine. So Cherchesov has the full squad to choose from.
This is an incredibly tight group behind Belgium, of course. Now, it can get very, very complicated as to who goes through, but it's also quite simple for Russia. They'll be through definitely with a win. How do you expect them to approach this game? Do you think they will be like they were in the second game and go that bit more attacking?
No, not at all. Even a draw for 99% sends us through. So I'm more than sure that Russia will play with five at the back. I think actually this is the only way to get something of this game, to play as compact as possible at the back.
And it's been a good week for Russia's goalkeeper on and off the pitch, Artur.
You mean Safonov?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I went to the training base 2 days ago, just before the interview. He got a call from his wife who told him that he became a father. That was just fantastic. He was smiling during the whole interview afterwards, so he was happy, and obviously all of his teammates congratulated him, so the atmosphere inside the team is just great.
Superb for him as well, because he came into the team, didn't he, for Shunin for the second game?
Yeah, absolutely. He's having like the time of his life. Debut start for the Russian team, his debut at the European Championship, and like everyone believes, this was the first of many, many more games to come for him.
And just finally for me, Artur, what are the Russia players expecting atmosphere-wise at Park? And of course, we had a very emotional game the last time Denmark were at home, and that is clearly going to be a big advantage for Denmark in this match. How do you think Russia are going to try and combat that?
During the World Cup, Russia played 5 games, all the way obviously at home, in front of home fans. The first 2 games at this Euro were played at home in front of our fans, so this is going to be the first match away from home and without any Russian fans, so obviously it's going to be hard. Everyone realizes that and getting themselves prepared for this kind of atmosphere.
And Artur, finally, who is the best free kick taker in this Russia squad right now, do you think?
Are you asking for your fantasy?
I'm asking. You found out my secret motive,
that's
Artur.
That's good, I like that. You're such a cynic, Artur.
Actually, that is a good,
that's a good idea.
So, okay, so help me out. Who should I get in for free kicks, do you think, Artur?
I think you should choose between Golovin, Miranchuk, and even Jika, because if it's around 25 meters or more, it'll be the centre back.
Who was it? Artur used to play for Russia? Was it Ignashevich or one of the Berezutsky brothers who used to take free kicks from 35 meters? Who was that?
Yeah, exactly, Ignashevich.
Ignashevich, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Some great free kick takers in that squad as well. Artur, thanks for coming on the show.
Happy speaking to you.
Great start from Artur Petrosyan, our Russia correspondent. We have seen a great crowd in Copenhagen. Even Mikhail Damsgaard, the player who came into the 11 for Eriksen the other day, said it was the most impressive atmosphere he's played in. It should be special even for this final one in Group B.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think you can't really beat playing in front of your home fans, you know, regardless of the circumstances. And to have that support, I do think it is an advantage for sure. You know, when you look at the likes of England playing at Wembley, you know, other teams playing in Hungary, you know, seeing all the fans there, it definitely makes a difference playing in front of the fans. So it's fantastic that, you know, the Danish players and the fans are there and their families can be there and get behind them. It's great, isn't it, to see so many people in the grounds now, because I think we've been so used to watching football without any fans. And it does make a difference.
Oh, completely.
Not just to when you're watching it, but for the players, you know, you can hear a pin drop. And I personally preferred it when we played at Wembley in front of like 60,000. I loved it because you can't hear what the manager's saying to you. So you kind of, it's so loud that you can't hear anything.
Couldn't hear you, boss. The crowd was
I mean, it was a good
loud.
Thing, I heard it. But wasn't. I can't eat, sorry.
Well, let's go to the other game in Group B, Finland versus Belgium at St. Petersburg Stadium, where there'll be fans too, of course. Belgium only need a draw to finish top, and the head coach, Roberto Martinez, can't wait for kickoff.
Well, we're very much looking forward to it. We appreciate going back to St. Petersburg as a stadium that we know well. We had really good feelings in the last 2 games, so we're looking forward to be on the pitch. Good opportunity to share more minutes to our squad, and respecting what the Finnish team has done so far in the tournament. Our situation has been a little bit different. We had players that they've been very important players for us that they haven't been able to play because of the injuries, the case of Axel Witsel, Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne. So this is a good opportunity for us to try to get more minutes, to get the match fitness, to try to stretch them as close as we can to the 90 minutes. And then players like Thomas Vermaelen, we've been always planned for him to start this game. So it's an important game for us to try to get every player in the squad the match experience that is always important in a tournament.
Roberto Martinez said, well, Belgium have been pinging around Europe during this tournament. They're back in Russia. And maybe, Chris, we should go there ourselves now.
Yeah, why not? Let's head to the wonderful city of St. Petersburg, where we have Elisa Saliu, who is covering Belgium at Euro 2020. She's back on the show. Hi, Elisa. Thanks very much for coming on the Euro show.
Thank you for having me.
So Belgium then already through, they can secure top spot. I imagine the group are feeling fairly confident given everyone else in this group is battling to finish behind them.
Yeah, exactly. For us, it's not really a game of life and death anymore. But our coach, he loves winning. He has a hunger for the win. So I'm pretty sure they're going to give it their all.
Elisa, we saw Kevin De Bruyne come off the bench superbly to win the game against Denmark. Has Roberto Martinez given any indication as to whether De Bruyne will start the next game, and what about the other injured players in the group?
Yes, he did. Also, some other guys that haven't been able to play a lot of minutes yet. So I'm talking about Axel Witsel, Eden Hazard. So they're also normally starting. And Thomas Vermaelen in defense. Yeah, so we're going to see all those guys. But I'm actually more curious to see Doku play, because we haven't been able to see him play. And I think that might be, yeah, really exciting as well.
I remember watching him actually at a youth tournament when he was at Anderlecht. And we actually talked about it last night about the quickest players at Euro 2020. He would be in that bracket, right? For those people who haven't seen Jeremy Doku play, what type of player he is and why do you think he might be able to make an impact?
Well, as you said, he's very fast. He's explosive. The way he can start, even Mbappe said he was impressed by him, that he had a conversation with his dad that they've never seen such a thing like it. He also, it's just fun to watch him play because he has fun himself, you know, with his dribbles, with his passes. He's still very young, but I think he's going to have an amazing career.
Elisa, who else in the Belgium squad have you been speaking to over the past few days?
I've talked to Thorgan Hazard. Unfortunately, he's left behind in Belgium because he hurt his knee during training, but it's nothing too serious. It's just out of precaution that they've decided to keep him in Belgium to get him prepared for the next games coming. Thorgan also said that the atmosphere at training was really, really good. Just that the Belgian players feel really confident for this game. Also had a little chat with Thibaut Courtois. Obviously, Thibaut Courtois is someone that really liked to amp up his statistics. So he wasn't really that pleased with the fastest goal in his career that he had to concede. But he said that, well, it's something that can happen in football. And he now said at least it's woken us up a bit. The second half was brilliant. So we're trying to focus on the second half mainly.
Do you think the Belgian players believe that the intensity of that Denmark first half performance ultimately might be a good thing, even though they conceded first, that it's given them a real taste of what it might be like as they go into the last 16 and potentially go further on in this tournament?
Exactly. Actually, that's something that I've asked Courtois and Thorgan myself. That's exactly what they said, that it was also good to get a real feeling of what the next coming games might be like, because they're going to be more intense. And also just, you know, they had the backing of the fans, Denmark. They were super motivated. So against Russia, it was less intense. So yeah, they said it was a good test, and now they know what to look out for, what to improve and such. So it was really an important game to take lessons out of.
Of course, they take on Finland, who are still playing for something in this group, Elisa. Would Romelu Lukaku be rested for this one? Of course, I'm sure he'd have his eye on the golden boot, having already got two goals at this tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone knows that Romelu Lukaku loves his goals. So yeah, definitely, definitely.
And just finally, Lisa, we were asking everyone on the Euro show about who is the best free kick taker in the Belgium squad.
The best free kick taker?
Yeah.
I hope none of the Belgian guys are listening to this, because they might disagree, because we have so many. I don't know if I would put my money on Lukaku or on Eden or even Kevin. I don't know. If Belgium gets a free kick, it's never a good thing for the goalkeeper.
Okay, well, we won't tell the other players that you picked out those ones. Elisa, thank you very much for coming on the show. It was great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Always brilliant to get Elisa Saliou's thoughts there with the Belgium team. And Rob, as she mentioned there, some team news from Roberto Martinez. He has said, "I never announce my team, but good luck Finland," because he said Witsel, De Bruyne and Hazard will start, because they need to get tournament rhythm after missing some football through injury recently.
I completely understand it. And the Ant Anderson, former England forward, they need to get minutes in the legs of De Bruyne. Not that it looked like it the other day when he came on and ripped up the game, but they need to get him and Hazard playing to matches before the knockouts.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you look at a player like Kevin De Bruyne getting injured, you know, in the way that he did. It was so unfortunate, wasn't it? It seems like a lot of players seem to get injured just before a major tournament. Yeah. You know, happened to Mo Salah before. David Beckham, Wayne Rooney, it's happened quite a lot. But someone like Kevin De Bruyne, for me, I've always said it, he's one of the best players in the world. And I think at times, you know, not only is it his ability, but his leadership. And I feel like he's that kind of player that in the 87th minute, when you need someone to play that pass that no one else can do, he can do it. You know, Hazard as well, when he was at Chelsea, one of the best players in the world. He's had a lot of injuries since he went to Madrid. So, but these type, I mean, the players at Tielemans, you know, Dendonka, they have so many players, Lukaku, in their team. It's almost like a Premier League 11, isn't it? Like, yeah, you know, you look at the bench, Benteke, like there's so many players that they have in their team. It's like the strength in depth is frightening.
They've got a very good squad indeed. They take on Finland. Their narrow defeat by Russia on match day two has left things a little bit tougher. They can still book a place in the next round with a victory in St. Petersburg or a draw if Russia lose. We'll hear from their defender, Jura Uronen, in a moment. But first, coach Marco Kanerva admits this game is huge for the country.
This is probably the most important game in Finnish football history. It's fantastic that we are in this stage that everything is in our own hands. So we can even win the group and so much to play for. And we're really looking forward to the game. Only the team believe that we can be in this position. Of course, we have dream about this. First we dream about to qualify to Euros, and now we dream about to qualify to the playoffs in Euros.
Trying to maneuver some space forward with him. And there's a chance! There's a goal!
We are all kind of used to playing on a tight schedule because every time you get together with the national team, you have 2 to 3 games in 10 days. So, you know, it's all the same. The weather is hot, yeah, but it's not the first time that one of us is going to play in those conditions. So we've started to prepare ourselves and our bodies for the heat, and I'm sure Belgium has done the same. So it's equal ground for both of us.
Marco Kanerva there. By the way, our Finland reporter Mikael Eriveri's put on this great story on the Match Centre about a game from June 2007 between Finland and Belgium. He's posted a photo of an owl, an eagle owl, in fact, standing on top of the crossbar of the goal during the middle of the game. The score was 0-0 when the bird appeared. And after Finland went on to win 2-0, soon after, the nickname the Eagle Owls was adopted by the Finland team. And it's stuck ever since. So Booby the Eagle Owl, as Booby was named, a lucky omen for the Finns. Let's see if they can get a bit of luck against the Belgians. A very tough game for them indeed. Let's go to Group C now, and Ukraine versus Austria. The National Arena in Bucharest is big, Chris. The stage is set for a gripping ties. The teams go head-to-head for second place in Group C. A draw is enough for the Ukrainians to finish runners-up behind the Dutch, but Austria will pip them if they win. The Ukraine coach and national legend Andriy Shevchenko says there is one Austrian player in particular who he is wary of.
I really respect Austrian team. I think they have the certain style and they keep it. They have great performers. They have a leader, Alaba, who is a player of great mastery, of great high level. They have several footballers who deserve respect. They play very aggressively, with a lot of power game. We expect a tough game.
Shevchenko saying they have to go for the win. They can't play for the draw. Well, Bogdan Buga has been following Ukraine at Euro 2024 UEFA, and he joins us to look ahead to this match. Hello, Bogdan.
Hello, everyone.
Do Ukraine feel like they're in a good position going into match day three?
Yes. I was at their base camp, and there was a huge confidence in everyone. Of course, everyone is saying that we need to win. We don't play for a draw because it's always a bad idea. But I think that in their heart, they know that 1 point will be enough, and they are capable of not losing to this Austria side. So they are confident, really. It's very pleasing because sometimes for a young team like Ukraine, confidence and experience is what really matters.
Am I right in saying there are a couple of injury concerns for Andriy Shevchenko?
Well, basically, they definitely have two players missing. One of them is winger Zubko, who was a starter against Netherlands. The second one is the reserve centre-back Popo. But Ukraine have other players in their places. First of all, it's Tsigankov, a very talented, I think most talented Ukrainian attacking player right now. He had an injury and he missed the Netherlands game. He was a substitute against North Macedonia, but now he should be fit and should start. This is a great boost for attacking player of Ukraine.
And how important and how vindicated has Andrei Shevchenko been by his decision in goal with the goalkeeper? Because obviously he isn't playing Andrei Pyatov.
Yeah, it was a very tough competition between three goalkeepers. Pyatov has been for many, many years irreplaceable goalkeeper. He was a captain of the team. But in this season, he lost his place in his club, Shakhtar Donetsk. So three goalkeepers had equal chances. Andriy Shevchenko has preferred Bushan, and I think it's a right decision because Bushan made a lot of very good saves in these two games, and he's grown in confidence. He feels very good right now, very confident, and it makes all the team be very confident.
Andrei Yarmolenko has stolen a lot of the headlines, but could we speak about Roman Yaremchuk, who has a couple of goals already? How impressive has he been?
Yes, he's been very great at this tournament and in the qualifying games. He's a very modern type of number nine. He's fast, he's technical, he has a good eye on the goal. He's very good at playing balls to his teammates. He has an assist in this tournament for Andriy Yarmolenko already. This is the striker who has potential to play in Serie A or even in the English Premier League, I think.
And just finally, Bogdan, we're asking everyone tonight who the best free kick takers at Euro 2020 are. So when it comes to the Ukraine squad, who's the guy that normally steps up for set pieces?
It's definitely Ruslan Malinovsky from Atalanta.
Oh, yeah. And he scored that one the other day, didn't he? That one from a difficult angle.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he's the only player who shot on goal from a free kick at this tournament. Also, Yarmolenko is a good free kicker and Tsigankov a good free kicker. All three players have great left foot. And if we speak of the right-footed players, it's Shaparenko. He scored a few goals this season as well.
Some good options there for Ukraine for free kicks. Eh? Bogdan, thank you very much. Finally, do you think Ukraine are going into the round of 16?
I'm very confident about this. I think this team has deserved it, and this team has everything to go to the knockout stage.
Bogdan, thank you very much.
Welcome. It was a pleasure.
UEFA's Ukraine correspondent Bogdan Puga. There was some great insight. In terms of Austria, Chris Parrott, what's the team news for this?
Well, Marko Arnautovic is going to start. Of course, he was suspended for their second group game. Franco Foda speaking says about the individual quality Robbie has to decide a game on his own. And interestingly as well, because of course, both these teams are tied on 3 points. And actually the goal difference is very tight as well. Ukraine just ahead. Now, some are suggesting, 4 points will probably be enough for Austria. Foda's having absolutely none of it. He's saying we're not going to go for the draw. We don't know if 4 points is enough. We are going into this match to win it because we know if we do, we'll definitely be into the last 16. But this is what it's all about, right? Match day three. Two teams, same amount of points. One will definitely be going through along with the Netherlands. And I think this is a very hard game to call. Both these countries have been involved in some incredibly entertaining games so far at Euro 2020.
Even Andrei Shevchenko himself has said the two teams are level in terms of quality. OK, also in Group C, it's North Macedonia versus the Netherlands. Both teams already know their fate. North Macedonia will finish bottom of their debut competition after two defeats, while the Netherlands will finish top after two victories. But their coach, Frank de Boer, was asked if his team can play even better.
Oh, it's like I said, everything can improve, a lot of things, even in defense as well as in the attack, a lot of things can improve. Against Austria, in ball possession, we could have played better, but it started in the backside of the pitch in the defense, so, but also attacking, there were a lot of things. When you have to play with high pressure, higher on the pitch, make some more space and create space for other players. This thing I would like to see against North Macedonia tomorrow.
Frank de Boer there. Well, the match is in Amsterdam and Derek Bruttmann is our man who will be at the Johan Cruyff Arena watching this game. Hello, Derek. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening, chaps.
Derek, you must be having great fun watching this Dutch team. They've had two cracking games so far.
Oh, they have, especially the first one against Ukraine. What a roller coaster that was.
Yeah.
And there was an awful lot said here beforehand about the system that Frank de Boer wanted to play and that it was maybe more defensive than the Dutch were used to. But it hasn't turned out that way because there's been loads of excitement in both of the matches, in fact.
Derek, the team seems pretty settled now, especially with Matthias de Ligt back from injury. But with a sort of free hit game here, to what extent do you think Frank de Boer will rotate his side?
Yes, I spoke to him earlier today and he said that his emphasis was in keeping the momentum going and getting this automatism in the team to a higher level. And so he said he's making two changes from the team that started against Austria and no more than that.
Wow, that is a very, very strong Netherlands side. Can we speak a bit about Memphis Depay? Because, of course, since he was last in action in an orange shirt, he's signed for Barcelona. How about that for a mid-tournament boost for one of the Dutch's most important players, I guess?
Yeah, and of course it follows on the back of Gini Wijnaldum signing for Paris Saint-Germain also during the tournament. I saw Frank de Boer said this afternoon that he hopes that with Memphis's future now settled, that he can focus entirely on playing for the national side. I mean, it's the thing about him, he's always important, even if he's not really having that good a game. And against Austria in the second match day, it was the same. He scored the penalty, he initiated the move that led to the second goal, but he didn't have one of his best 90 minutes. So I think everyone's hoping that now that he knows where he's going and what he's doing for the next few years, that he can just completely focus on getting Oranje as far as possible in this tournament.
Derek, how crucial has it been to play all three group games at home? I'm sure you've been soaking up the atmosphere in the city of Amsterdam as well.
Yes, for them it's been fantastic. They've played for, you know, there's this kind of well-worn thing that's been used quite a lot in the media, but Yuri and Timber, who played the first two matches when De Ligt was recovering from injury, had never played in front of a crowd as large as the one in the first game because he's broke into the Ajax first team during the COVID restrictions. Oh. So for him, like 16,000 people was his largest crowd ever.
And Derek, we're talking about great free kick takers. The Dutch have had some brilliant ones down the years, including, of course, Ronald Koeman. Who do you think are the best free kick takers in the squad right now?
Unfortunately, I think the best free kick taker is Steven Berghuis. And because of the system that Frank de Boer plays, there's not really a place for him in this team. He's an out-and-out winger. He plays on the right, although he's left-footed. But he's got a beautiful technique. But while they still play 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, I can't really see him getting into the side. That said, Frank de Boer did also say that tomorrow he may consider switching the system. And if he did to 4-3-3, then I'd like to think that Berghuis could come on because his corners, his free kicks, fabulous.
Yeah, superb player in the Eredivisie. Chris and I have seen plenty of him. Let's see if he's involved against North Macedonia. Derek, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Well, the North Macedonia and Napoli midfielder Elif Elmas says his country believes they can defeat the Dutch.
Well, we are prepared. We trained today as well. Of course, we have a very difficult match ahead of us. What we need to do is to play our game for us and for all Macedonia. For every game, we always go to win. And to make the whole nation happy. As you said, we played two good games. The thing is that we don't have experience of such a big tournament. We didn't have the experience until now. And I think that what we've learned at this tournament will stay with us for a long time. And we will be more ready for next big tournaments coming up.
Well, it has been great to have North Macedonia at the tournament, Chris, and it will be a farewell of the game in Amsterdam.
Yeah, captain and one of the greatest players ever, really, probably the greatest North Macedonian player ever, Goran Pandev, is going to retire after this match with his final game for the national team, Rob, at the age of 37. Just to put this into context, of course, he scored their first ever goal at a major tournament in their opening match at Euro 2020. His international debut was in 2001. Now, this nation, the first major tournament they tried to qualify for was Euro 96. So we're talking about a guy here who has played for almost all, really, of this country's history as an international football team. And there'll be many who hope he can go out with another goal and maybe just a historic first point for North Macedonia as well.
OK, Chris, thank you very much for your company on the show. Leanne, finally from you. who's most impressed you in terms of team in this tournament? Who do you think is going to have a really good run to the final?
I think, you know, regardless of their last result, I think France. You know, I think France and Germany, I've really, really been impressed. That game, when you saw that game against each other, I feel like it was almost like a final. And I think they're just fantastic teams. So I'm going to give France to my team.
Can't wait to see how it all pans out. Leanne Sanderson, thank you very
thank
much
you.
For your company. And a quick reminder to listen to the Euro Show. It is available live every match night of the tournament, not only on the official Euro app, but also on Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast. It can be found at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favourite shows. Keep on tuning in. We are very grateful to have you with us along for the ride. See you next time at UEFA Euro 2020.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.